How's it going, Reef Keepers? Well, this is not exactly the episode that I had planned to follow up the last one with, but we've had a pretty significant change occur within the industry. And I felt like, you know, despite the fact that this might be a little shorter than most of my podcast episodes, I felt the need to go ahead and get my thoughts out there. You guys seem to appreciate my thoughts when it comes to gear, at least some of you. And I do have to warn you, I mean, as the title will likely indicate, this episode revolves around Ecotec Marine. And Ecotec Marine historically has been one of those companies that really captures the hearts and minds and wallets of a lot of people. And whether it's because people are impressed with them truly or because they've invested a significant amount of money into Ecotec Marine products and they feel the need to defend that investment, there's usually a lot of emotions associated with having frank discussions regarding Ecotec Marine. And there's a lot of debate that is spawned out of just about every mention of Ecotec Marine as well. Although I will note, it seems that in the recent like year or two, there's been a downward trend in the instances of like knee-jerk defense that I've seen out of people when Ecotec is criticized. And I think that there's good reason for that, and we'll kind of get into it here for sure. I do first want to mention, I do have this puppy that we got for our kid scurrying around the house and, you know, attacking my feet. She's real cute. It's a real sweet dog. But if you guys hear any like snuffling or any barks in the background, I'll try to pause it before that happens. But yeah, she's a 7 week old puppy. So what are you going to do? I mean, it is what it is. So been cleaning up a significant amount of fecal matter in this house since getting this puppy. I always marvel at the fact that I seem destined in my life to continually take on greater responsibility in the fecal matter cleanup department. It just seems like it's my destiny to continually grow the amount of fecal matter that I have to clean up between all of my pets. I mean, it's unbelievable, but it's funny. It's like the more fecal matter I'm cleaning, the happier and more fulfilling my life gets. But I mean, there has to be a point. I haven't reached it, but there has to be a point where like the amount of fecal matter cleaned becomes like a detriment. So, and it starts to be a detriment on the quality of your life. But, yeah, I basically spend all day obsessing about, fecal matter in my fish tank and cleaning up my dog poop and turtle poop. And, you know, I mean, it's just like one thing after the next. So anyhow, let's get into the subject matter here. So why Ecotec Marine is suddenly, you know, being thrust into the limelight, it's certainly not by their design, not by their wishes, that they're currently spotlighted in the hobby. But if any of you pay attention to me on Instagram, Telegram on Instagram, any number of other people who have reposted or made posts about what's going on in specifically the Wavemaker space on socials, Facebook, Instagram, if you've gone on Reef to Reef recently and looked at the trending topics, you will have noticed that there was a significant disruption in the Wavemaker space of the hobby. Now, I'm going to use this term Wavemaker because in doing some Googling a while back, I think I determined that even though I want to use the term Powerhead, I think that the correct term is actually Wavemaker for things like Ecotec Vortex or Neros or anything like that. I think they are still technically in the pump family of some sort, or some branch of the pump family, but I'm going to use Wavemaker when I'm discussing these things. I know some people really like to use Powerhead, I'm going to try to stay away from that terminology. But, essentially, what has occurred is that the absolute Goliath, known as Jabal, slash, in some areas of the world, and apparently now here, Jekod, they cloned the Ecotech Vortech Wavemaker. And what this means is, in case anyone's unfamiliar with the Vortech Wavemaker by Ecotech Marine, the Vortech, the unique selling point about it is that there's a dry side and a wet side, and the electronics, the power cord plugs into the dry side, keeping the cord out of your tank, and then magnetically turning the propeller component within the little cage that's magnetically secured on the inside of the tank, thus a wet side that is not electrified, which is a brilliant and unique thing. However, I will say that while it is a brilliant thought process to have created this, I think it's a bit of a, and this is like kind of my commentary on the system more so than anything else, I think it's kind of a travesty that it has, the Vortech pump has been out since what, 2014? I mean, is this like 10 years? Maybe earlier. I'm trying to remember. I was taking a look at the patent paperwork, and I didn't read deeply into it, but I looked through it. I'm trying to remember what year that actually like took effect. I'm thinking 2014. That was the year that Ecotech Marine filed the patent for this Wavemaker design, where you have a wet and non-electrified wet side and an electrified dry side so that the cord hung on the outside of the tank. Now, what is interesting, and this is, by the way, why you should listen to Reef Therapy, they had Patrick Clayson, who is one of the, I think there were three guys who all went to college together. This is my repeating of a story. You know, on my first episode ever, or the second episode maybe, I went over like the Ryan Bachelor BRS story. Again, like that's what I remember of it. Here's what I remember of it, or how I interpreted it. Patrick Clayson and three guys started Ecotech Marine. And two guys started Ecotech Marine. And the initial Vortech design, what the product was intended for, was not like reef aquariums. Interestingly, what it was originally intended for was, if you go to get a pedicure for your feet? I think it's pedicure. If you go to get a pedicure and you put your feet in like a tub or a little tank on the floor, I guess at some places this is like a thing. Maybe this is all pedicures. I don't know. I haven't had one. But if you put your feet in a tank or a tub, there's a need for water movement for some reason. And they designed it to basically eliminate the risk to customers of electrocution, because they noticed that these companies were using like whatever pump or pumps or, you know, variety of methodology or methods for moving the water in these tanks. And so they were like, well, if humans are going to have their feet in these tanks, like we should have a way to power the water movement without actually having the power make any sort of contact with the water, which is very, very genuinely intelligent thinking. I mean, there's few people who kind of can just look around the world that's happening, you know, all around them and go, hey, that thing over there would be safer or better if we did this, and then just make it happen, right? So, I mean, that to me was impressive. That's an impressive thing that they were able to notice that and generate a very unique design off of this. Now, I will mention, there is some conjecture about how especially unique it is, but I think it's probably safe to say that at least in the United States, this is the first time that, like, water motion of that scale on, like, a consumer, like, small form factor level was approached in this way. I think that's probably safe to say. So it was, you know, in my opinion, definitely a patentable thing. And so they logically, you know, they're like, we think this is unique. We're going to go and, you know, protect our IP. We're going to protect what we have generated here. You know, we're going to form a company and get a patent going and make sure that we have this design on lockdown. So somewhere along the road, though, after this, you know, I would imagine that there's probably, and I don't know what the cost for the Ecotech Vortex Spa version was, but they've always been fairly expensive, so I'm assuming it was probably fairly expensive, and I probably should have listened closer to the part where he was talking about this in the episode. I mean, maybe like most spas just use this technology now, or maybe there was like a limited, maybe there was just a limited like higher end spa interest in this or whatever. But regardless, you know, or by the way, the reason that they may have expanded out from the spa sphere could have just been because somebody was like, hey, what about, you know, putting this in a reef tank? Maybe one of them was an aquarist. Who knows? The story's out there. He probably mentioned it. I just can't recall. But regardless, at some point, they expanded into the aquarium sphere with this, which, again, that's another, you know, space. And I would imagine that there's more tanks in the aquarium space than there are tanks in the spa space, right? They expanded into our space and found great success because it was still this incredibly unique design that had, you know, at least in America, never been utilized before. And it could be the world, by the way. So, again, credit where credit is due. That's unique. It was kind of a stroke of genius to generate this, you know, brand new way to move water in a quote unquote small tank setting or a, you know, basic consumer setting, and do it through magnetism, keeping the electricity out of the tank to protect the living creatures in the tank and people. So hats off to him there. However, here we are 10 years down the road, an MP40 is like $480. And that patent has become a thing that they would probably lay down their life to protect, right? And by they, I don't mean Patrick and his buddies who started the company. I mean Aperture. Because, as is well known, Aperture, along with Neptune Systems and BRS, they snapped up Ecotech Marine. And I believe Ecotech had snapped up, or shortly after acquisition, snapped up AI. And thus was born the core umbrella of the Aperture family. So, interestingly, Patrick stayed on board at Ecotech, one of the three founders. He stayed, as he put it in the Reef Therapy episode, Aperture wanted, just for like continuity and like comfort level of employees and transitional, you know, ease of transition, I guess I should say, they wanted the owners to stick around for like X amount of time. And after that time was up, Patrick was just like, I'm going to keep hanging out because, you know, I'm sure he's a multimillionaire. I'm sure all three of those guys are. The IP that they had to put on the table was unique and locked into patent. They sold tons of units. They'd expanded into lighting by then. The Radeon is probably, you know, the most popular high-end reef light, quote-unquote high-end. Again, that definition's up for debate, but as far as popular, expensive reef lighting goes in America, I would say that the XR15, XR30 Radeons probably have to be the most popular, right? And I'm sure that these guys are multi-millionaires, so it's interesting to me and kind of admirable to me that this Patrick guy stuck around and stayed with his team and is still, from what I can tell, I tried to read him, you know, pretty closely during parts of that reef therapy episode. I mean, he seems to care. He does. He strikes me as caring about the company and to be pretty aware. He apparently set the pricing prior to Aperture taking over. He was like the guy who priced the products. So I would expect that, considering Ecotech Marine's success and, you know, high value, high profit prior to Aperture taking over, I would assume he's pretty dialed in on what's going on and what's been transpiring and why it's been transpiring. And I would just about kill to pick that guy's brain about what he really thinks, which he, you know, could never say, unless he, you know, I guess maybe he'd be under gag order even if he left the company. But regardless, I'd love to hear what he actually thinks about Ecotech's trajectory and lack of innovation and pricing and refusal to fix software bugs and arbitrary withholding of Wi-Fi capability and all the other shady multi-tier pricing scheme BS that Aperture has forced upon Ecotech Marine. And by the way, I 100% believe that this is forced on Ecotech Marine, all of these shortcomings. I believe it's forced by the powers that be above them at Aperture. And I feel kind of bad for Patrick and the other people who are working hard in Pennsylvania and, you know, trying earnestly to keep this company, you know, in a reasonable state while orders are coming down from on high. I don't know if, you know, the hierarchy and Natalie live in Minnesota or whatever, but, you know, here comes orders from Minnesota. No, we're not pursuing a new version of the Vortec. No, we're not going to launch a G7 yet. G6, fine. We'll keep selling it. You know, no, we're not fixing Mobius. No, we have the Neptune MXM module, which, by the way, how often that even works is user to user for sure. No, we're not doing Wi-Fi. We have the MXM module. They have to buy a Neptune Apex system and buy the MXM module and then buy the Ecotech products if they want to do them on Wi-Fi. Oh, and we're raising prices again because we have the patents. Nobody else can do this. We've got the shill network and we're just going to lean on them to hype, hype, hype. Can you imagine being someone at Ecotech who knew what that company was before, and you're sitting there watching the decisions of Natalie and her bean counters come rolling down the hill at you, and you're like chained to a rock and you can't avoid them? I mean, that's got to be a terrible feeling. And because I am impressed by, you know, like up through like the G4 Radeon, and up through, like, you know, I guess just Aperture taking over and stifling any continuance of of innovation and the pricing starting to just drift upwards endlessly, I am someone who's impressed with what Ecotech achieved. Like, what an interesting little company, you know, an American-based company. Yeah, they got, you know, a lot of their components from overseas. Who doesn't at this point? But they were keeping assembly in America. And the pricing was steep, but it never felt like it feels now. It felt like steep, but just on the edge of attainable. Even if it were like a one-off piece of gear for a reefer who does not have a high income level, who has like a middle income level, even if it was one or two pieces of gear, like you could get it and like financially recover from it and bank on it lasting for years. I mean, that kind of a company that is able to hit all those points and achieve all these, you know, innovation milestones. And I think that it's impressive. It's similar to how I feel about BRS prior to Aperture taking over. You know, in my very first episode talking about Ryan and BRS, I went into that in detail. I think it is impressive. Like, the road to the point where the selling out part happened is American innovation and success and ingenuity all the way. I mean, it's like inspiring stuff in some cases. And that's what makes it so disappointing. And again, who am I to sit here and be like, you know, oh, you shouldn't have sold out? Who am I to sit here and say that? I'm nobody. And by the way, if I were offered untold millions and I could just like jet set around the world and do what I wanted for the rest of my life while I'm relatively young and I got all this in front of me, yeah, I mean, I'd probably take the millions too. I don't have a problem with somebody building success and then capitalizing in the biggest way possible on that success. They earned their freedom, right? But the cost to the hobby because of this stuff, it just has been tremendous. It has been reef keeping in America on the gear side, on the industry side with like electrified gear. It has been so like slashed at the Achilles heel, slashing the Achilles tendon by Aperture. I sit here and think about it and I get worked up and that's why I'm going slow. I have to keep my cool. And I look at the evidence of how bad venture capital is for so many industries. I mean, if you just look at medical alone, like it is so often that this, what has transpired in the reef keeping gear industry in America, this is just par for the course for venture capital. And I'm not saying venture capital like never works. I know that there are cases where it does, but it makes so much sense to me that Ecotech would be where it is right now, which is, make no mistake, on its knees. And Aperture would be faltering and, you know, spitting up blood and struggling and dragging itself along like I think it is, like I suspect it is. Despite the front they put on, I think they're in trouble. It makes so much sense to me within the context of applying venture capital to this hyper niche hobby space where in many cases, like everyone of like consequence that acts with consequence upon the industry really kind of knows one another. Heck, even the general population of common reef keepers generally knows if they've been in the hobby for a while and actually have interest in any kind of social side or industry side. I mean, they basically know all the major players and individuals. It makes so much sense that these struggles are occurring because a boardroom of powerful people in like New York City or wherever Bertram's located sit there and go, oh yeah, from here, we can make the right decisions to make this like super unique, hyper niche hobby space a profitable sliver of what we do in whatever package of companies were snapped up in this time frame with all these other little companies. This will be our diverse pet industry one for package 7 or whatever the hell. Like, that's how these people work. They just buy sweeping swaths of, you know, diverse holdings in various categories and group it into packages and let the only people who can invest in the economy with any kind of like substantial meaning, which are super rich people. Like, I forget what the stat is, but like 70% of the stock market investments occur in from like the top 10% of wage earners or something like that. It's wild. So we're talking about, by and large, rich people investing in other rich people in their decisions and their packages, who are then like prescribing orders and commands that they believe will lead to financial success, often in spaces and, you know, territories of the economy that they have no conceptual ability, no ability to grasp, even on a conceptual level, I should say, how things need to go and what will matter to consumers and where pricing levels should actually be given the unique constraints going on within the groups of people who buy these products. They don't understand the demographics. They don't, I mean, it's like, I could just go on at the things that are not understood by a bunch of powerful rich people sitting in a boardroom in New York City. And so they, you know, they, whatever, they hire Natalie, who, you know, I've dogged Natalie before, and I don't know if it's fair. I mean, like, you know, she was like a social media person for like Petco or something like that before she was selected, and I guess was selected based on the game plan, which was basically we're going to market like crazy and have all these shills that we give free gear to, you know, hype us to the stars and be able to just creep prices up and up and up and not waste a bunch of money on R&D, which is a total bean counter move. We're not going to do any of that. We're going to try to primp ourselves and get picked off by whatever, you know, Chewy, right? Or whoever, Spectrum Brands. And none of it worked out. And now we're at this weird point with it where like it's really starting to fail, I think, in earnest. And I think you're going to start to see the erosion become so apparent. And I think that it started with this still confusing to me decision by the powers that be at Aperture to basically burn every conceivable bridge that they could in order to like try to, I guess, funnel their loyal following, whatever's left of it, into only buying core Aperture umbrella brand products, right? BRS, Neptune, Ecotech, AI. So by dropping support and product lines from every which way corner that you can imagine in the hobby, I think that the hope was, oh, we'll pigeonhole everybody into thinking that, you know, the really the only choice in gear is what BRS, who used to be this reputable entity, and I guess probably for some people still is, people who don't pay as close attention to it as me or you guys, right? They're like, these people who haven't really caught on yet, we're going to ride this horse into the sunset, and we're going to pigeonhole them into getting these outrageously expensive products that really, by and large, are put together pretty cheaply, and we're just going to stack every card in this deck in our favor and hope that, I don't know, like, you know, some good sales numbers for a couple of quarters will attract the eye of Spectrum Brands, Chewy, again, whoever. I can't imagine why else they would have made this move. The move to just, like, jettison everything they used to stand for in representing all these diverse little companies and sectors of the industry. I just don't get why they would have done that. But anyway, here's the fallout from it. You're starting to see it now. Here's the fallout. I'll stop, like, you know, waxing on about this, trying to figure it out, because it just still makes no sense to me. Maybe someday it will make sense. But here's the fallout. The very real fallout for the decision makers, the bean counters at Aperture, the reality is you reduced your holdings, your saleable holdings, to this very elite group of companies that you have iron-fisted control over. Every one of those companies has a limited number of gear categories that they have available to them, a limited number of lines, right? Like AI has Neros. Ecotech has Vortex and Radeons and the Versa. Neptune no longer has the Sky. They have a controller. You know, they have like a few odds and ends, like a terrible ATO and a crazy loud auto feeder. Like, there's this limited number of things that these core companies do. And so what that does is it makes every one of these lines or categories that these companies cover brutally, brutally critical to the survival, or I should say, I don't know about survival yet, but at the very least, the profits of Aperture. So the profits of Aperture are incumbent upon the success of these very elite few companies and their very elite few bases that these companies can cover. And if one or two of these bases that these companies have covered in this thin spread of coverage that they can produce fails or goes down or gets destroyed by competition, suddenly numbers start changing from black to red very, very quickly. I don't know how much of Ecotech's sales the Vortech accounted for. I know it's extremely popular. Tons of people have them and continue to buy them, or continued, I should say, until a few days ago. They had the patent on them, so only they could produce them, which, you know, basically hems everybody in. People seem very taken with the design of the Vortech, and I understand it's unique. I think it makes your tank look like Frankenstein. Sorry if you have Vortex and you like this design. I think that when I look at a tank and there's a Vortex on either side and I can see the wart hanging off either side, I think it looks like Frankenstein's neck. And it's kind of funny that Aperture, in their desperation in these days since Jabal launched their Vortex clone, they announced, what's it called, Vortober or whatever they called it. And they actually have two Vortex that are like facing inward so that the warts are out. And I'm like, I got it. And by the way, I totally may make a spoof with like Frankenstein's head and like the knobs coming out of his neck. Like, that's what that's what that reminds me of. So I don't understand from an aesthetic standpoint why people are so desperate to get these things. I think that they're very like cumbersome and noticeable on the outside of the tank. I do understand from a maintenance standpoint, especially if like, you know, you just have a huge tank and you need a lot of wave makers on it, or you're a business. Ben Johnson was talking to me about like the value of having Vortex when you're a business that's servicing tanks, because you can swap out wet sides really quickly and it cuts down on a ton of time. I totally get that utility, that functionality from a maintenance perspective. But for the average hobbyist and for the price of these things, it's astounding how much these things have risen in price. Go back and look at the prices of them like 5 years ago. It's unreal. I should have done that before this podcast, but I remember like a year ago, Reef Dork, I watched his one of his videos on the Vortech, and I looked at the whatever price he said. I forget what it was. It could have been like $390 or something. And I looked up the price of it, and it was like at the time like $460 or something. And I commented that on the video, and Reef Dork came back and was like, I didn't even believe this comment. And then I looked it up. I mean, it's like unbelievable. It's true. That's how much they've gone up in price. Like, yeah, I mean, it's crazy town. And I feel that, by the way, I feel the need to rescind my now that a clone exists of this product, I'm going to rescind my projection from previous episodes where I repeatedly said I was positive that they were going to go to $499 for the MP40 this holiday season. I don't think that's happening anymore. I think this Vortober thing where they're spotlighting the Vortech that just came out today from Aperture is definitely was a thing that they rushed to the table because they are very nervous right now, very nervous about what's happening in that space, the space where you are electrifying your controller on the out or your wave maker on the outside of the tank, which is so attractive to so many people. So let's talk about the Jabal clone, because it's worth talking about. I don't have one yet. I'm going to be getting one. I'm going to get one of the cheapest ones. And I'll probably, that preschool tank that I keep up, I'll just probably end up giving it to them for free. They have good wave makers already, but I'll probably just give them that and swap out an old one and keep it as an extra. But I want to test it on like my 25-gallon nano tank before that. So I'm gonna get one of the whatever they're called. Technically the term that they're using for these is DMP dash whatever, like David Marie Peter dash 10 dash 20 dash 30 dash 40, etc. I'll get the 10. And I'll give you guys in a future episode a breakdown of what I think about it. But I have received reports from just allies who ordered these things right away and got them in right away that they're pretty legit. They're pretty legit. I think that last time I looked at the page, the DMP-10, the entry level was like $112 or something like that. So compare that to the MP10 Vortech, and that starts at what, $330 or something? I mean, you got to be kidding me. So like, you could conceivably buy like three DMP10s for the price of one Vortech MP10. That's what I always laugh about when shills or fanboys are like, but the service, the warranty. I'm like, what warranty? A year? Are you for real? And also, why wouldn't I just buy this? And then if it breaks in a year, like if it breaks at 366 days, you're in the same position as you were with buying one that cost $112. So if you buy a Vortec, an MP10, and it breaks in 366 days, Ecotech might be nice to you. They might not. I suspect that the niceties are going to trend downward as finances constrict here shortly. They might be nice to you and help you, but technically they don't have to. That year's up. I'm willing to bet for $112 that a DMP10 will run longer than a year. And if it breaks, oh well. I get another one because I can handle $112. What I can't handle is outfitting my tank in multiple MP10s at $330 a pop. I certainly can't handle outfitting my tank in MP40s for $480 a pop. I don't even know what the MP60 retails for. It's like, it's insane. It's like between $800 and $900 or something. Bonkersville. These are prices, by the way. You guys know I get mad about this. There is no justifiable reason. None. I don't care if you hold the patent. There is no justifiable reason to be charging that amount of money. By the way, especially with a one-year warranty, especially considering if you ask anyone who had the original models of the Vortec, like the original Vortec line, before they added the QD or made any of those changes, the original Vortecs were built like tanks. They were built like Abrams battle tanks, and they're still running on people's tanks to this day. Those people often have purchased the QD version or the later produced versions that have come out over the years, just, you know, as production changes and componentry changes. And, you know, when I say changes, I really mean it gets cheaper. It gets worse made over time as companies get greedier because venture capitalists are pulling the strings. They were getting cheaper already anyway, but the whole venture capital thing really accelerated the drop in quality, according to many people who have Vortex. And those longtime users, they're well aware of how much worse the build quality is and the reliability is. How much, how much more likely to rust the wet side has become. How easy it is to knock these things out of position on the dry side. It's clear that the quality has dropped while the price has gone up, and they have clung to that patent. They have clung to that patent like, you know, a buoy in a hurricane. And sorry, but like the waves have just gotten too big. One wave in particular, that wave is Jabal. And I forget, maybe I said this to some friends, but I think I said something like when it was, you know, when it hit the, you know, the social media side of the hobby that, oh, like the DMP's coming from Jabal, like they finally cloned it. I think I said something like Jabal is inevitable, and like opposing Jabal is like fighting the sun. Like, that's what it is. And that's the, it's so funny to see these people on Reef to Reef, these fanboys like freaking out. There's also like people who have some weird like economic principle or something who are like, you know, they deserve it. Even if I don't like the prices, they deserve it. They deserve to be the only ones selling it because they created it 10 years ago. And I'm like, okay, one, they don't deserve it purely on a basis of doing their customer base, their loyal customer base, wrong for so long. They cheapened the build quality of all of it and made it worse. They made it rely on Mobius, which they never fixed. Still unreliable. I just had to delete my app and re-download it the other day to get it to connect to my Neros. It's terrible. They put no effort into fixing bugs and maintaining any of it. The Verse is terrible with it too. I could go on about that. They've just consistently raised the price sky high, as high as they can go without, you know, eliciting mass general rage across the hobby, which I think they've eased into a point where they've avoided that mass rage. But I think that mass rage at the pricing has been warranted for quite some time. By the way, it's warranted to some extent on the Radeons too, the G6, for how insanely weak that thing was. And then their fix for it, they put out a kit that you have to pay for to basically make the lens go backwards in time to ground that they've already trod on, because obviously, despite charging more for the light than ever, they made massive mistakes, right? So there's a ton of reasons. By the way, I just had to pause it so my Neptune auto feeder could roll, because it sounds like a freight train's going through my living room. There's a ton of justifiable reason to be angry with Ecotech. They, and to a large extent, Aperture being they, but they're one and the same. I mean, the founders sold them out, so consider them one and the same. They have wrought upon themselves their own ruin on this. And I think that they are done. Let me just state that out right here. It's going to take time. The Jibao DMPs need to be out there in the wild and used for, you know, a couple of years to convince people who are looking sideways at it. Some Chinese company, that can't be that good. It's going to break, whatever. The track record for me on Jibao is that 80% of the products last for more than 2 years. So, you know, that's still 2 in 10 that have failed. I had one control box fail and one just mechanically fail, Wavemakers, over the last few years. But all the other Jibao products that I've gotten, including gyres and other stuff outside of standard Wavemaker kit, totally fine. 80% success rate for me. I mean, that's anecdotal, but I think that the evidence is kind of overwhelming based on the number of people who already subscribe to Jibao not being bad gear, because it's not bad gear, especially not for the price point. I think that it's a matter of time. I think that I don't know, because I don't know the sales numbers, but I feel considering the desperate clinging to the buoy of that patent as the crazy waves of the front of the hurricane rush up that they have been doing for the last few years with these products, especially the last 2 years. I think that patent meant so much to them, and they were banking so hard on getting through the storm with that patent intact. And I have to believe that unless they take drastic action, I don't know. It could be too important of a product category, too important of a piece of the puzzle of their profit. And Aperture, this could conceivably be it. It really could. Again, I don't know, but they have reduced themselves to such a small subset of the industry. Only their core brands, only these core lines that are spread so thin as to have one, maybe two things that can satiate each little category of what needs to happen to run a reef tank. I mean, I don't know. I it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt bad. And there's no way that Ecotech is not reduced from this as a as a piece of Aperture, as a sub element of Aperture, there's no way that the entity Ecotech just keeps employing the same number of people, just keeps being able to assemble stuff in America. No way. The Vortech had to have been too much of what they do. So, here, I'll give Aperture a freebie. It might be, at this point, I'll just tell you up front, Aperture, it might be a little too little too late. Here's some ideas. One, you could spend R&D money again and innovate again, which is something that you fundamentally don't understand because you're a bunch of bean counters. And you have no idea what it takes to actually be competitive in this space. Obviously, the people making the decisions have no clue. So you spend R&D money to reduce the size of the Frankenstein, knob, the wall, the tank wart that is the dry side. You keep the same level of functionality, but reduce it. I have to believe that I know the shape of the wart has changed since the original iteration. I don't really know that the scale of it has ever changed. I have to believe that there's a way 10 years down the road in technological and manufacturing advancement, there has to be a way to reduce the size of that wart 20, 30, 40%. That would be a way that, basically Jibao, and really Chinese engineering in general, they're really quite effective at being copycats, you know? And I mean, you have varying levels of like excellence in the copycatism, but I don't sense a whole lot of, you know, creative ingenuity coming out of these Jibao-like entities across really multiple sectors. And so what they've done is they've cloned old tech, because Aperture, you have old tech. That's all you have. Your tech is old. It's antiquated. It runs on Bluetooth only, unless you want to go through the multi-tier process of getting the right to have Wi-Fi in 2024. And what you could do is start to innovate. You could activate Wi-Fi. You could make that a thing. How about that? How about that alone? You can just... That alone, I'm just realizing this. If they just allowed Ecotech products to directly connect to Mobius via Wi-Fi, they would literally... There would be people who bought it for that. For the ability to rely on Wi-Fi versus Bluetooth. That alone would make up a little bit of ground. You could actually change the form factor again. You could improve the quality without raising the price and actually eat into your margin a little bit. You could do that, which is what you've been unwilling to do to this point. You could just bite that bullet and be like, hey, we need to go back to the manufacturing quality of the original Vortech, because that's the only thing we're going to be able to stand on now, is that these literally last 10 years. Like, we need to build these to last 10 years. You could make your warranty 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. That means something to people. You could make your warranty better and longer. There are a lot of things they could do. Here's the reality. They're not going to do any of them. They won't do any of that. Because the bean counters running this show cannot get out of their own way. They can't do it. So none of that will happen. If you took all those improvements and push this thing through in the next year or two, they might be able to save some of it. I mean, I think they're not in a position to ever turn this around to be what it was before Jibao came onto the scene with this clone. I don't think it'll ever be the same. But you could recapture some of it if you make the right moves and you make them as soon as you can. But they're not going to do that. And in the meantime, while they sit there and rest on their laurels and, you know, I can't imagine that they're going to go try to fight this thing in, I don't know if like patent court is a thing. I'm sure that there's some term for the kind of court you'd fight this in. China doesn't care, you know, and it's so funny to me that there's this contingent of people who like stand on this patent thing. Like, how dare they? How dare they? That's not proper. It's like, okay. Well, it's often those same people. Like, this is what it reminds me of. That this whole thing, this is not right. It's not fair. You know, one's ingenuity should be respected. What this kind of thing reminds me of is very much how, like, companies expect to be able to just absolutely bend the consumer over a barrel and rail them relentlessly for everything that they are worth. Everything. And take everything from them that they possibly can and have no check or balance on this rampant, unbridled, vicious, capitalistic move. Right? They want that version of capitalism so bad when it's going their way. And then it starts to, the tables, as Michael Scott would say, oh, how the turntables. When the tables turn, suddenly it's, oh, woe is me. Woe is me that vicious capitalism has come for me and my brilliant invention. I'm just a humble inventor. No, you're not. You're a shark, and you were eating my leg 10 seconds ago. I have no remorse left. I have none. I have no respect left for them. I have no remorse left for them. And really, for almost any company in the modern era, almost any corporation in the modern era, certainly almost any venture capital operation in the modern era, I have no regard. They have wrought the system by which they can rail consumers at each and every turn for every red cent that we're worth and our dignity. And so, you know what? Have fun living in this system. That's what I say. You made the bed, sleep in it. They made this bed. Have fun trying to get a sound night's sleep now, Ecotech/Aperture. There's going to be some lost Z's over at HQ, let me tell you that. Let's talk about the hero that we didn't expect, but the hero that we got, Jabao, okay? So they cloned this old tech and, interestingly, made some changes to it. So I've got actual user reports. I've got actual user video. You can check it out on Instagram if you want to. The ones I posted are not the only ones I received. I got a lot more feedback and photos and stuff on my end. Looked at it all closely, asked questions. Got a significant amount of detailed feedback about this product. The product, now again, here's the question mark, longevity, okay? Longevity is the question. Will these things hold up for at least a couple of years? That'll make your however much they are, like, I think the highest end one is like around $200 maybe. So like, you're spending between $100 and $200 on varying levels of strength of pump, right? On various flow rates. So obviously the better the flow rate, the more expensive. So the feedback on the pump, on the Wavemaker, is that the magnetism is strong. That was a big question for me. I was like, is this thing going to be strong enough? Part of what prompted that question is the fact that it has suction cups on it. on the wet side and dry side. Strange, right? Ecotec doesn't have suction cups, so I'm like, There was a thoughtful, purposeful decision made to not outright clone, but to change this certain aspect of the pump. Like, now we have these suction cups. Like, what does that mean? So I assumed, they went cheap on the magnets. Well, doesn't seem to be the case. So what happens is, and I'm sure it'll be different with different glass thicknesses, but I would guess as your glass thickness goes up, you're buying a bigger pump iteration. So maybe it'll just scale. But I watched video of it. When you connect the pump through the glass, the wet side and the dry side, when you push them together and they magnetize, the magnets are so strong that they actually cause the suction cups to quote unquote auto suction. So you don't need to press it like you would a traditional suction cup inside of an aquarium or whatever. No. It syncs up so that they're aligned because of the magnetism, these strong magnets in them, and then auto suctions the suction cups to the glass on either side. And it's strong enough in the videos that I saw that when the cameraman got up close to it in this clip he sent me, you can't even see that there are suction cups at all. You can't even see that there are suction cups. That indicates to me that likely the suction cups may help a little bit with noise dampening. They look to be, pretty standard rubber makeup of some sort, some composite maybe. They might help a little bit with dampening the noise of the pump, the components whirling around. Also, and this is the one that is the most interesting to me, a major problem with the Vortec, why a lot of fish stores, by the way, a lot of LFSs will go away from the Vortec, is because you can knock that giant wart out of position very easily because it's purely a magnetic connection. Well, what if you brush up against it now using the Jabao DMP version? And instead of knocking out of position and your wet side goes flying and your dry side's dangling and rattling like crazy because the magnets don't have anything to sync with, what if now it just bends a little bit and comes back into place because there are four suction cups that are jammed onto the glass? What if they actually improved it? Interesting, right? I kind of like it. I kind of like the thought process. So, I just got done criticizing Chinese engineering, but it seems like they may have found a simple solution to something that after 10 years, Ecotec couldn't or wouldn't apply to their product, which was a solution to this very, very critical weak point. Interesting. Reports are also that the DMP is weaker. The flow rates are weaker at each level. So what that means is the DMP 10 is not going to match the flow rate of the Vortec MP 10. So I would guess, I don't know, I looked into it, but I'd guess you'd have to go up to the DMP 20. To match or exceed the flow rate of the Vortec MP10, which, whatever, again, it's what, $20, $30, $40 more dollars? Not a big deal. It's still not a big deal. It's unreal, the price points on these. I mean, the way that Jabao priced these, by the way, those business guys running Jabao, they know what they're doing. The price point was designed to kill Ecotec Marine. There's no two ways about it. That price point was designed to take the Vortec line completely out of the equation within however many years, as soon as possible, they hope, I'm sure. But, I mean, we're looking at the utter collapse of that product line and possibly Ecotec itself and then possibly Aperture itself within 5 years easily. I mean, that could be generous, depending how much profit is tied up in the Vortec, which I suspect is a significant amount. This is a landscape-changing, reality-bending move that Jabal has made. It's astounding. It really is. It warranted its own episode. I truly believe it. So, yeah. I mean, from here, yeah. I'm watching and waiting with extremely high curiosity and fascination. So look, this was a short episode. I'm pretty much done. I've pretty much said what I have to say. You guys have heard plenty of parts of this conversation before. It's just that now all these little, you know, not little either. I mean, like a lot of little, but a lot of also big, just poorly timed and poorly conceived moves that Aperture hierarchy has made have thinned everything out for them so that they're in a tenuous position. And I don't know if Jabal just was ready or if they were watching, but if they were watching, oh my God, they absolutely picked their moment correctly. And this could legitimately collapse a significant competition structure for Jabal and the likes of Jabal in America. I just want to stress that to me, it's really kind of sad. It's more of a sad story than anything. There's a little bit for me of teehee, I was right. Like, but there's not, once I get past that, I'm just like kind of sad to have watched like the efforts of venture capital, all in the interest of some super wealthy people who have no interest in this hobby and no understanding of it, for their self-serving interests. All of us normal reef keepers have been robbed of this, you know, really interesting, dynamic, innovative, class-leading sector of a niche hobby space in the grand scope of hobby spaces in the world. And it was something that, you know, prior to Aperture taking over and starting to make moves and changes, it was really one of the like last things I can point to that America could really hang its hat on as far as, you know, developing products and producing products and, you know, just having this like, you know, fascinating business dynamic, like outside of Silicon Valley, you know, and a few other, you know, like things that America retains that we're especially good at. It was cool that, it was a nice thought. It was a reassuring thing that in my chosen hobby, my life's passion, reef keeping, America was a leader. Like we were truly a leading nation in the industry space of this hobby, on the industry side of it. And they have brought all of that to a precipice and are teetering on the edge. Use whatever, you know, metaphorical scene you want. Clinging to this buoy with one hand left on the bottom rung of it. And it, they're about to get washed away by the onslaught of the Goliath that is Jabal. I mean, it's almost a fitting end if it is the end. It is. And I could see it being the end. Again, maybe I'm, you know, maybe I'm doom and gloom and, with, you know, they got some thing up their sleeve to extend their lifespan or, you know, some partnership they're going to announce that makes them more dynamic and they actually put money into R&D and They actually come out with the G7, which brings us back to G4 times, and they come out with the, you know, Vortec MPQD2, and it's 50% smaller. Maybe all this happens. I don't see any of that happening. I think they really could conceivably be done. And at the very least, Ecotec Marine will be left a husk of what it formerly was. They'll live now only in my memory, as Rose put it at the end of Titanic. I think that's probably where we're destined to end up. I don't think Radeon sales of the whatever, the 3 years old G6 is going to cut it. And the Versa's not that good. And I don't see a way out for them. If the longevity proves itself on these Jibal pumps, they are living on borrowed time unless massive game plan changes occur. And it's such an if, it's such an unlikely if. So yeah. Again, it warranted its own episode because it is, and I think it's a bigger deal than people think. I think it's enormous and there are enormous implications. And I think that eventually gaps will widen and open and voids will begin to appear where Aperture crumbles or falls away or weakens into irrelevancy over the coming years. And those voids will be opportunistically filled by the entities, companies, people who are well positioned, possibly overseas markets that are licking their chops right now, quite frankly, and waiting to expand into this space. And I wonder what happens if Aperture does truly like dissolve away or fragments into pieces or whatever, you know, in the coming years, catalyzed by all the bad moves that they've made to this point, all the confusion and strangeness that's gone on. And then this perhaps final nail in the coffin that causes the fragmentation. If that all does occur, I wonder what happens to these entities. What happens to Neptune? You know, I've got all Neptune gear. I have thousands of dollars in Neptune gear. I don't want, despite my being critical of Aperture and often my critical look at Neptune, I don't want them to fail. I don't want AI to go away. I actually really like, you guys know, I like Nero Wavemakers. I'm a big fan of them. I think they're low profile. I like that you can, kind of turn them around at a 15 degree angle in the tank and get the exact flow pattern you want. They've been super reliable for me. Like, I don't want that to go away. I don't want Ecotec to go away. I run a Versa for Kelk. I like my Versa despite the fact that it's constantly disconnecting and I'm having to reset it and everything. I just want them to fix the bugs. I just want them to make this stuff work. I want these companies to work. I want them to work properly. And I don't want them to be controlled and pressed and suppressed anymore by this venture capital entity that's pulling all their strings like little puppets. I mean, it's just, I know there's good people at these companies. I know there are. I don't think Patrick Clayson would have stuck around unless he cared. Why would he stick around? Guy's got to be a multimillionaire. If he didn't care, why is he there? It doesn't make sense. So I have to believe that there are people who are still there on these teams at these respective entities under the Aperture umbrella who care. And if it all fragments, I mean, like, do people pick up the pieces? Do people come out of the dark and invest? Where does Reef Jesus end up in all that if it all fragments apart? What if BRS is cut loose and set out to sail? I mean, does Reef Jesus come back from the dead? I don't know. He liked Neptune a lot too. It could be interesting. So these are the things that I think about in my free time. I'm sure there are more productive things to think about. I'm sure my wife would prefer that I spent my time focused on things that are more productive to building and maintaining our lives. But instead, much of my time is occupied thinking about what's good for the common reef keeper and what's good for American reef keeping. What's good for the industry? What's good for our creatures? And I can't help but wonder and connect dots and kind of play out these eventualities, like at least scenarios that these eventualities, you know, may coalesce in. So, all right, I'll stop rambling. I'll leave you folks alone for at least another week. It was my pleasure to get some time to rant more about aperture-related stuff today. I have other content that I am close to, other podcast content that I am close to crystallization on, so to speak, that I will be ready to mentally take on here in the next week or two, and I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, this one was kind of an easy one because I was able to parse through what was going on and get reports back and feedback and video content on early deliveries of these DMP Wavemakers by Jabal and think through the logical eventualities that could transpire. And I was like, well, I've got the energy. I've got some coffee in me. I'll do this today. So, all right. I'll leave you guys to it. I got to go take this puppy out. She's pawing at my feet. She's definitely got to pee. And I don't want that happening in the house. So, until next time, keep on reefing on, folks. Take it easy.